I can start. All right. Okay. Well, good morning. You're here to work. It's a workshop, and I want you to take notes. Okay, I will not exactly follow what the material you have in the book, because that wouldn't be right. I'm going to supplement what's in there so you get more. I'm going to start off by telling you a story. Everybody likes a story. But don't go to sleep. It's not a bedtime story. It's a wake-up story. But, you know, many, many eons ago, You got me too left. Well, I had it up here, but I almost blew them out of the room. Long time ago, you know, when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth, there was a colony of army ants, and they had a queen. Her name was Basta, Queen Basta. And Queen Basta was a powerful queen of all the whole world. And she had armies and she had generals. And typically, the generals would come in and they would say, the ants have been working all day and they're very tired and they need rest. And so Basta would go up there, she'd climb up to the top of the anthill, and she would wiggle her feelers, you know, her little antennas, and she'd say, the sun will go down. And sure enough, the sun went down, and it was night. And all rested, okay? They took a rest. And in the morning, well, it wasn't morning yet, but early while it was still dark, and everybody had rested, the generals would come in and say, it's time for the ants to march again. And so Basta would go up to the top of the hill and wiggle her antennas and say, let there be light. The sun will rise. And sure enough, the sun would come up and it would be daytime. And this went on over and over again. Until one day, there was a famine in them. There wasn't any food to be found. And the ants starving. And Queen Basta said to her generals, she said, gather your troops together and go out and search far and wide till you find some food. And so they sent out scouting parties everywhere, and they came, finally, one scouting party came to a place and they found a big dinosaur dropping. It was huge. Food. Right? Food for the ants. And so they sent back scouts and they told Queen Basta, we found food. And they got communicated to the other troops and all the whole army of ants went out to bring back this food. It was enormous and heavy. And they began pushing it and lifting it and carrying this food back until they got to the top of a mountain. At the top of the mountain, they had a problem. And they had to get it down into the valley. But if they rolled it down the mountain, it would keep rolling on down the valley and they had no way to stop it from rolling. So they went and they told Queen Basta the problem. And she said, you know, I will meditate on this. And she did. She thought about it. And finally, she said, push it over the top and let it roll, you know, let it roll down. And we'll stop it. Okay? But we've got to take delivery of this food. So the general went up, all the ants got behind it, and they pushed this big ball and began to roll it out. And as it approached the anthill, Queen Bastha came up on top of the anthill. She put her antennas up and she wiggled them. And she said, "This delivery will halt." And so it did. Because Queen Bastha knew where to put the stop. And she knew something else. She knew when to put the stop. Okay, and that's what we're going to find out today. Where do you put the stop? And when? Okay, because putting a stop on is just as bad as not knowing when. In fact, it's good to know why. You know, why are you putting a stop in the market? Now, I said I'd make you work, and I will, okay? When you're trading a mechanical system, then you've got to put the stop wherever the system dictates. Otherwise, you've wasted your money and your time with this mechanical system. If you're not going to follow it, then why get it? The same thing is true with an advisor. When you have an advisor, he's your mechanical system. You're supposed to do everything he says. Okay, and so you don't have to worry about the stop. You just put the stop where the system dictates to put it. But if you're going to be a trader instead of a robot, just blindly following a system, then you've got to do something that most people don't do very well, and that's figure out where the stop goes. Okay, stops are what make the man or the woman, okay, I got to be both now, man or woman. That's what makes a trader. Maturity, knowing where to put the stop and when and why you're doing it. Okay, that separates the big guys from the little guy. So, you're here, I can't hand you a magic formula that says, here's where the stop always goes. But I can show you the things that you ought to be thinking about when you place a stop in the market. Okay. And one of them is your own comfort. And you have to take into consideration your comfort. If you're not comfortable with a stop, wherever you put it, you're not going to trade well because you're going to be unhappy, you're going to be miserable. You say, why did I put the stop there? I must be out of my mind. Okay, you'll have remorse, you won't have confidence in what you're doing, and you'll fail. Okay. Now, what else might you consider getting stopped? Anyway, stick a hand up. Listen.
Previous price action.
Very good. Okay, that's good. The previous price action and say what happened before. You know, and engage your stop ahead. Anybody else? Yes, sir. It says place it above or below a pivot point. Okay, that's saying where to place it. Okay, but I want the things you should consider in placing it. What would you consider in placing it above or below a pivot point? Why would you put it there? Okay, what do you take into consideration?
Right,
it could be a profit or two. How about the size of your account? Right? Doesn't the size of your account affect where you're going to put the stop? Of course it does. If you're going to put a stop, I've actually seen this with a particular advisor where he tells people that they can open an account for $1,000, and then he, in his newsletter, he gives them a $1,500 stop. It's true. He does it all the time. So that's no good. I mean, you're going to wipe out your account. You can't do that. Yes, sir.
What your objective is in a trade?
Good. Right. Another consideration is very good. He's saying your objective for the trade, how long you plan on being in there? Is this a scalp trade? Are you in there for the long haul? So forth. What else might you consider? What if you got $1,000,000, but if you would lose 200 on this trade, you'd become catatonic, be sucking your thumb in the corner, and couldn't trade for 6 months because you can't stand the pain. Right? And that's something you should consider. Not only the size of your account, but how much pain, your tolerance for pain, has a lot to do with where you put the stop. In fact, it has a lot to do with whether or not you even enter the trade in the first place. Okay. All right. Anybody else? There's at least 15 things you should take into consideration. Good. How many positions you already have in this market or other markets? In other words, you don't want to overextend yourself. Right. That's going to affect your stop. And if you're so extended now you can't put the stop where you need to, then you shouldn't even be trading. Good. Another good one. Volatility. Right? Volatility is how big each bar is from top to bottom. That's volatility. It's this volatile. It went from here to here, from the high to the low, from the low to the high. If volatility is too great, it could overwhelm your stop. Any others?
Where you're wrong. If the market goes to where your stop is,
right, okay, right, that's good. He said, where at the point where you would be wrong. Okay, in other words, if the market goes to stop is, then you're wrong. You've misgauged the trade entirely. Right, you should be out, maybe even before it. I never let it get there, if I can help it. How about the tick size? Would you take tick size into consideration? Let's say you're in the S&P, and you want to put a stop that's three ticks away. You're going to do a quick scalp in the market. You want a short stop three ticks away, and you look and you see that the tick size is five at a time. What's going to happen to you? And you're going to be out of business before you get in. Tick size. How about speed? How fast is the market? Sometimes the size is small, but the market is running up and down real fast. Just jumping. Would you take that into consideration? Sure. Okay, if that market is fast, they're going to get to your stop just about the time you get the order on the floor. You're going to be stopped out quickly. Or they may fill the wrong order. You may be in going the wrong way. Okay. So these are things that affect where you put the stop. Some couple of other things that have to do with timing. What if you're slow? Right, not everybody runs a 100-yard dash in 10 flat or less, or 9 flat, I don't know. 9-1. Okay, some of us are slower than others. if it takes you time to make up your mind and you have to do a lot of, there's nothing wrong with that. But you have to realize that if you're slow or slower, relatively speaking, you need to put the stop further away. You need to allow, because time, you need more time. If you're slow in executing the order, in other words, you may be fast at making up your mind. I mean, you see something in the market and you made up your mind what you're going to do, but you're one of these chatty type people when you call over. Hey, Fred, how's the weather? How's your wife? What do you think of the ball game last night? All this time is passing. Time is passing. You're going to have to put your stop further away if you're that kind of a person. Nothing wrong with that. Just take it into consideration. How about the flip side of that? You got a chatty broker. Chatty Chili the broker. You call him and he wants his past time of day. And meantime, the market's moved past where you would have put your stop. Have you had that happen? Some of you have. Okay. What if you tell him, well, look, I don't want to hear from you. You know, don't do anything. Don't talk to me. Just do my order. But if he's that kind of broker, you know, and the phone rings and it's somebody else, he'll talk to them. And you're sitting there waiting for him to put your stop in market. Okay. And you got problems. So it's a long time. Whether you're the source of the delay or your broker is, or the way you're connected to your trade, if it's slow, if you've got to talk to a broker who has to call a trade desk, who's got to send a runner to an odd desk, an odd desk signals it in, you got time problems. Right? You've got to adjust your stop to take care of the turnaround time. You time your orders. Find out how long it takes you to execute. But with a stopwatch. Find out how long it takes you to get a turnaround, because you've got to adjust your stop accordingly. And another thing that you've got to take into consideration is who is on the floor. Who's down there? Now, you're not going to find out unless your broker or you call down and find out who's on the floor. Because I'll tell you what, if I'm trading wheat and General Mills just stepped into the pit, I'm not even going to trade, let alone put in a stop. Okay? If I'm in there, I'm going to get out quick, because I don't know what those nutcases are going to do. They may run the market up so they can take it down. They may run it down so they can take it up. I don't know. All I know is that when they come in, I don't want to get steamrollered. All right? Well, if you find out that there's a fund down there, you know, this fund is... Peter Jones is buying today. Where are you going to put your stop? You got to put the stop in before you ever make the trade. Don't do it. Stop trading. But you got to call up and find out. You got to communicate. Say, who's down there? What's happening? Is the market thin? If the market's thin, they're going to run the stops. Even the big markets, even the S&P, many times I'll call and I find out, I'll say, what's happening? And I'll say, it's thin. There's hardly anybody around. Don't trade that. Not unless you got an inside tip which way they're going to take it. Because they're going to, this is called market efficiency, right? Go up and get all the stops to satisfy everybody, right? You know, they know where the stops are. How do they know? Anybody? How do they know where the stops are?
Sure. They talk
Okay? They look at the chart, they talk to each other. But the best way they know is they're holding the tickets. Right? They have the tickets in their hand. And if you're Refco or you're Rosenthal or Gilderman, they got a stack of tickets like this. They, you know, statistically speaking, what they're holding in their hand represents what's going to happen. They've got it in their hand. Right, so you got to find out who's down there before you trade. Then you'll know where to put the stop, or whether to even put a stop, or just stop trading until they get out of there. And these are things to think about when you're trading and when you're putting in stops. I cannot tell you where to put your stop, and you can't tell me where to put mine, because we're all different. Right? You say, well, I'm always going to put it 10 ticks away. I'm going to use 10 tick stops. Does that make any sense? Does that have anything to do with the reality of what's going on down there right now? No, it doesn't. Okay, you say, well, I read this book. It says you should always put a stop 15% away. 15, I don't know what, 15% or something.
They're holding all the cards. Does it make sense to put in a stop at all?
We're going to talk about that. The question for the tape is, if they're holding all the cards, does it make any sense to put it in a stop at all? And we'll come to that, because that has to do with when you put the stop in. Now I lost my train of thought. Where was I? Anybody know? I thought you were taking notes. Right, he said if some percentage, a percentage stop, you know, does that make sense? Well, that, you know, it doesn't. I mean, what it's a grab bag attempt at putting a stop. So I don't know where to put the stop, so I'll put it 15%. 15% of your account or whatever, your margin, I don't know. I mean, I've read it a lot of different ways. You know, but they don't make sense, because they don't take into consideration the reality of what's going on in the market right now. And you need that reality in order to know where to put your stop. Okay. Now, since it came up, I'm going to answer that question. You know, when do you put the stop? Knowing that they're holding all the tickets, and they know where the stops are, doesn't it make sense to hold back your stop until they've gotten done running them? Okay. They're going to run the stop. Now, you can look at a chart and watch them do it. Right? Okay, let me put one up. See if we can. I'm on a long leash here. I got my glasses. Yeah, let's say a market, let's say you're trading a breakout, trading one of Ken Calhoun's five vertical bar tops or whatever. Whatever you call it? Five VBT, TBY, what? You know, and it's going to break out of there. Let's look at this. We need to do a little. If I get this right the first time, it'll be a miracle. Look at that. Miracles do happen still. I'm looking at figure number 5 in your book. Now, if you look at figure number 5, you see that the market went up, and it started moving up in September, and it kept moving up into the middle of October. This is a daily chart of February crude oil. And then it made a top. In the middle of October, we have a top. And then we start to see a major correction in the market. And what's happening there, I mean, if you analyze what goes on, I think it helps you to place your stop. Okay, the market had more demand than supply in the beginning. In September, there was a lot of demand for crude oil for some reason. And a lot of buying came in the market. When there's more buying than selling, the market moves up. And as it got higher and higher in price, there became fewer and fewer buyers who were willing to pay that price until finally there just are no more buyers. Right? Nobody's willing to buy at that price. Everybody would like to sell at that price, but nobody wants to buy. And so the market begins to correct because those people who are buyers and want to sell now, they want to take their profits. Okay. And so the market begins to recede or move away from that high that was made in October. Now, as soon as there's two kinds of people in the market, essentially, you know, that's bulls and bears. But they're not all exactly the same in their thinking. There are short-term bulls and short-term bears. Right? There's scalpers who want to get in for a quick deal. And so when the market appears to fail, a lot of these bears, short-term bears and scalpers, they jump all over, right? They're always looking to trade a market down. Right, they can't see, they can't look up, they always look down. I guess they're all tall people or something. They like to sell. I mean, it's quick, you know. In and out quick, get your money. And so they start selling. These bears sell. Now, there's a logical place to put the stop if you're a bear in the middle of October. It's right above that point up there that made the top. Say, you know, I'm going to put my stop here. So there'll be a lot of tickets down on the floor that have a stop there. Now, some of them will trail a stop down as the market moves away from that high, but and they'll take profit objectives. But some of them will hold the stop back, or at least part of their position, they hold it back because they figure maybe we can get a real long run out of this market. In other words, they take short-term profits, they take some intermediate, and they hold back in case the thing goes to hell in a handbag. Okay, and so those stops are up there. Okay, and as soon as the profit taking's done, and then the people who are bulls, right, they have a bullish leaning toward the market. I will hold my stop out of the market until that happens. Until I see the correction, I won't trail that stop. I give it room. Now, I've already covered costs. I've already made a profit. And what I'm hoping for is a home run. Okay. You have to yell. I can't hear you. Could you come up here? Please. I want to hear the question. Every question is important. Come on.
I was saying, what is the effect of any continuation in a Fed where it did correct, but in actuality, speaking of another bluff move?
the question is, what if that correction continued on up, you know, and then I lose some of my profit. I already made some profit. I won't let it get any worse than break even. If I can detect in any way that I'm in trouble, I just go in and take the rest of my profits. This is a judgment call. I won't sit there and watch myself take a bath if I can help it. Because my body is ugly anyhow. I don't want to look at me taking a bath. Neither would you. Common sense always has to override everything else.
Joe, earlier you said that your volatility has to be twice your transaction cost before you get into market. How do you define the volatility since you're a day trader? Do you use hours or daily bars to define your volatility?
Okay, the question is, how do I define my volatility? That's something I'm coming to. I'm there. Let's do it. The way I define volatility, average volatility for me is I use 5 bars. And as a rule, I use 5 bars. I measure from the high to the low of the last 5 bars. Each one individually, high to low. Subtract the low from the high, and I get the difference. I add those 5 differences together and divide by 5. And now you know the extent of my mathematical capabilities. And that gives me an average volatility. Now, if there is a bar that's not normal in the last 5. In other words, there's an aberration in the market. Okay. Most of the bars are about the same, but here's this one monster outside bar, you know, where somebody gave a report or somebody shot themselves in the foot, you know, and here comes this bar. Okay. Then I'll use 10 bars, you know, and average that out. Or I'll just drop that bar and take any other 5. I discard the wild one, right? Because it represents an abnormality. It's not normal. That's how I determine what my volatility is. Yes, sir. Could I use? I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. Starkman? I don't know what that is. I don't work for CompuTrack. I really don't know what it is. But anyway, you know, I mean, you come up with a lot of ways to determine volatility.
The time frame is the 5 period zone.
Any time frame.
Whatever you're trading, the time frame you're trading.
Yeah.
You trade 5 minute bars.
Right. I do that within whatever time frame I'm trading. I get to do very little day trading these days because so many people are calling me up that I lose my concentration. And I've been doing a lot of trading off the weekly charts like I used to when I first started trading. You know, when I first started trading, there wasn't any day trading. Nobody had a computer except these $3.5 million monsters that fill up a whole room. And so you used to go fill your charts. I had a chart service. I would fill in the chart, which was a major pain in the neck. And I would determine my trades. I would call them in. I had a discount broker, $65. That was discount. I knew people that were paying $100.25. I had a discount at $65. And one time I moved my stop twice in a week And you should have heard him carry on. I'm going to have to raise your rates. He did. He said, yeah, I mean, you moved it twice this week. True. Okay, and that's the way you traded it. And during the day, you know, you did other things. You had to do other things. I keep them going nuts. Okay. I mean, my neighbors used to wonder what I did. I'd say, this guy's always hanging around. if I look in the window, he's on the phone. They think you're a bookie. They didn't know what to make of us. I mean, just to keep from being embarrassed, I went and got a job. So, that's the way it was in the olden days, right? I see a few gray hairs in here that know what I'm talking about. Yes, sir. When, the question is, when do I use a catastrophic stop? And that's almost always. I'll tell you why I always have a catastrophic stop in the market. I hadn't come to that yet, but I always have one. And it's always in the market because I have known one man that had a nervous breakdown while he was sitting in front of his screen. And he had no stop in the market. You could have a heart attack. It's true. This is a true thing. This man had $15,000 in a trade, the day trade, and he had a big position. He had $15,000 and he had to urinate. And he went to the bathroom. When he came back, he had a $30,000 loss. Okay. That must be him. Okay, so I always have one. Yeah, I always have a catastrophic stop. In case I slump over by the screen, which when you're day trading, I do, I fall asleep. I'm telling the truth. I believe in truth. I fall asleep watching a 3-minute S&P chart. I'm just human. Can you think of anything more boring? Especially after 10 o'clock, between 10 and 1:30, you know, what do you do? Tough. I will not, you know, I won't trade the S&P between 10 and 1:30. I won't do it. I've done studies that prove that, you know, between, now I'm talking central time here, that between 8:30 and 10 and 1:30 and 3 are the best times to trade the S&P. And the very best of the best is from 8:30 to 9 and 1:30 to 2. And you'll take more losses and give back more profit between 10 o'clock and 1:30 than you would ever imagine. I mean, it can literally change your success to failure. So I won't trade it then, because that's when the cats are away and the mice play. Okay, the big guys come in early, they make their money, they go to lunch, they have 2-hour lunches. Okay, they come back and they say, what do you mean, why do you guys take the market up here for? And they bash it right back down. <All right. laughs> And they teach those guys a lesson. And if you're in there, you'd be part of the lesson.
Which reminds me, you know, there's another way that you can get stopped out of the market, and that's day trading itself. When you choose to day trade, and I'm not trying to convert anybody from day trading, that's not my purpose, but when you choose to day trade, you automatically choose to stop yourself out of the market. Because by definition, you've got to be out before the close. Which means you can see a market making tons of money for position traders, and you have to battle your way into that market every morning and fight it all day. Okay? And there's lots of times when... I mean, how many times have you seen something like this? Yeah, figure nine in your book. Okay. That's a 5-minute March DMARC chart. That market is making a fortune for position traders, as you see it there. But what happens to you when you're a day trader? I mean, that would have been a nightmare for a day trader. See, so, you know, that's a matter of choice. Okay, I always try to stay over if I can. I always try to turn a day trade into a position trade if I can do it. Always. Except in the S&P, I won't stay in there because of the margin. I don't want to tie up that much money. I think their margins are way overstated, but I do it in the night. I trade the night and hold it overnight, just $6,000. Yes.
Yeah. What's your criteria for holding an overnight trade? It's got to be in profit.
Yeah, my criteria for holding overnight is that I've covered my costs, I've made my intermediate objective. I know where I can safely put my trailing stop, and then I'll hold overnight. Now, this again depends on the market. What if I'm in a currency? Sometimes I have to hedge other ways besides just using a stop. Sometimes I'll spread, instead of a stop, I'll spread in the market against another currency. If I'm near the expiration of 1 month, I can go to a back month, but that's the only time you can do that in a currency. A lot of times I'll transfer the stop into the Forex, but 80 to 90% of the time my Forex stop gets hit. I will be stopped out. Yes, sir.
Can you relate all these wonderful one-third combined stocks?
Certainly. The question is, could you relate it to buying stocks? Relate the one-third to buying stocks. You just do exactly the same thing. I mean, it's a moot point. Right? Just do the same thing. Cover your costs. Take a small profit somewhere in the middle and then hang on for the ride if you can get one. The only thing is with stocks, I mean, if you're wrong, at least you get a dividend. Yeah, after trading the futures, the stock market is duck soup. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's easy. Because you don't have any time constraint. You're wrong, so what? So you own a stock. If you selected your stock wisely, one that has a good yield, then at least you're going to get yield out of it while you hang out waiting and praying for the market to change. No, I'm not talking about short. Short is tough in the stock market because you got to have an uptick before you can do anything. Okay. Let me, oh, don't get tangled up, Ross. Let's see. I'm going to go and look and see what I need to do. What time is it? Got about a little over a half hour before they cut me off. I want to make sure I'm covering everything I promised. Got to keep my promise. Oh, okay. Let's talk a little bit about the volatility stops steady. Now, this, the volatility stop, I think it was invented by Wells Wilder, but I don't really know that. I know he did the parabolic stop. He or somebody invented that. And the way the volatility stop is done is the same way I explained to you that I compute volatility. You take the sum of the differences between the high and the low of the last X number of bars, and you divide by X, and you get a figure. And you take that figure and you add it to the lowest close of the last five bars, and you subtract it from the highest close of the last five bars, and now you have two figures. And the one you plot is the one that's the furthest away from the price action. You plot the one that's furthest away from the price action. And this study relieves you of some of the chore of knowing where to put your stop. Because what you're doing is letting the market tell you where to put the stop based on the volatility in the market. Now, this is a crutch until you can develop the maturity to figure out your own stops in light of your own account, your own feelings, and so forth, all things we talked about earlier. Okay, this is what the volatility stop study looks like. This is figure five. And anybody want to get smart? Okay. You see, it's plotted above and below. They're always the one that's furthest away. Use the number that's the furthest away from the price action. Okay, now here we see the volatility stop in a trend, and it's containing that trend very nicely until you get stopped out. And so it's a very nice way. And this study was originally a study that you're always in the market. It was a mechanical system. When volatility was above you, you want to be short, and when it's below you, you want to be long. And there are people who trade this to this day, and they have a moderate degree of success with it. I know professional traders who do this. Now, they have filters that tell them when to use it and when not. Just all by itself, you get whipsawed to death. If the market goes sideways, you'll be killed. Okay, but they have filters that tell them, you know, in no uncertain terms, that yes, the market is now trending. It's okay to use the study, and so they go in and they trade that way. You'd be surprised how many people do this. Okay. Especially some of the funds, they use this kind of modeling. Now, did you see in the trend that was going up, it contained the trend very nicely. But when the trend started down at point A on the chart, you got stopped out. You got stopped out there. Now, I've used this as a way to stay in a trend for a very long time. What I do when I'm using this is I'm not afraid to curve fit the volatility to the market. I mean, after all, I don't want it to lie to me. I want it to reflect what the market's doing. So if I'm short, and by the way, this volatility is set at 5, and the volatility stop uses a multiplier, and I set the multiplier to 1 so that it wouldn't multiply. 1 times anything is itself. Now you know the other extent of my mathematical capability. You know, I mean, I flunked math. I'm not a mathematician. If math was a requirement for trading, I'd have never made it. And so, in figure 5, you see, I got stopped out. Now, what I did, and this is figure 6, is I began to play around with the multiplier until I found one that would allow me to clear that point where I got stopped out. Because if I go back in this trade, I want to be able to stay in it for a long time. Okay. Now, sometimes volatility stop is very far away from the price action. Okay. And if you can't take the heat, stay out of the kitchen, right? I mean, if you can't handle it, then don't trade this. But many times it's within reason. And so I moved that curve out by using a multiplier. I set the multiplier to 1.7. There's no magic in it. I just wanted to move it far enough so I could see a little space between the point where I got knocked out the first time and what the market action really is. And so in figure 7, you see how it looked. And then you have containment. Now there you see it at 1.7, you can see it up at the top. 5 bars, volatility set at 1.7. It now contains the move. Right, even way down in December when there was a big reaction, the move was contained, and yet I determined that where the volatility stop would be long before it ever got there by making it clear point A as soon as it happened. I curve fitted it in that state. And this will keep you in a trend for a long, long time. Longer than most people would stay in on their own. Right? Most of us chicken out before this. you can't take the heat. Right? But even if you got stopped out there in December, you still would have had some nice profits in the trade. Another way to do it is to use an offset moving average. I always start out with a multiplier of 1 in the market. And then if I get stopped out on that, then I move it out and curve fit it. But I've got to have a trend to do that before I do that. Now here you see, here's a market where I use the, and this is a 54 bar moving average. Okay, and this, I actually did this one. This one's for real. But I read somewhere that, see, I'm an experimenter too. I read somewhere that 54 bar moving averages were really something. So I tried it. It worked. I figured, what have I got to lose? Besides money, I mean. I gave it a try and it worked. This was weak. Now, to be fair about this, I want to show you something in that market. Because I was not able to stay in the whole time. I mean, early in the trade, I got long. This is figure team. I got long weak right in here, right above that, right there, where the arrow is. That was in the middle of September. I got long, and boy, I'm sitting there thinking I'm getting rich. And then we had this day here. I don't know how many of you remember that. But I got nailed. That went all my profits were gone. I mean, I was sitting there, one day I was fat cat, and the next day I was lean. But I said, you know, I went back in the market over in here when it was taking this high. I got back in, but this time I had that moving average on there, and I hung tight. This figure 14, and the experiment worked. Now, I don't recommend experimenting with your money all the time like that. But I already had considerable profits from some other things, and I decided to try it. Sometimes you do that. So you can fit a moving average to a trend. I mean, you can just draw a trend line, you know. Now what I did to get that is that you notice I removed that bar. I moved that bad day because it was a freak. It was a freak day. It doesn't really represent the market. It doesn't represent what's really happening afterward. Okay, because the market moved down, it had dropped that way, and the very next day it was back up where it was. And so you know it was a freak day. And if you keep that freak day in there, what's going to happen to your oscillators and moving averages? They're going to be all skewed. They won't be right.